All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season, when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. You know, most hunters don't think about their food plots until it's time to throw down some seed for the fall. And if that's the case, you might be leaving a lot on the table. If you want deer using your plots when season opens, you need to give them a reason to be there all summer long. That's how you build movement patterns. Not hoping for them in October, establish them in June. On top of that, bucks are growing antlers right now, does are about to be nursing fawns, and your plots can be a real herd health tool during the summer months, not just a hunting tool come fall. Whitetail Hill has a warm season lineup built exactly for this. Summer Bulk is their big warm season forage blend. It grows 4 to 5 feet tall, holds up to browsing pressure way better than something like soybeans, and it'll carry all the way to the first frost. So it doubles down as an early season food plot for us down here in the south. Then if your soil needs a little bit of work first, check out Dirt Doctor. It builds topsoil, breaks up compaction, and gets your plots in shape for a great fall planting. So check out Summer Bulk and Dirt Doctor at whitetailhill.com. Again, that's whitetailhill.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Coming at you from North Carolina, we just wrapped up our hunt. Been here for a couple days now. Jacob might hate me after this hunt's over. But we got a buddy here, Mr. Zach White. Zach, what's up?
How's it going, man?
Pretty good. Special guest on the podcast.
Yeah, man, I'm excited about this. This is going to be fun. I've been listening to you guys for years, so it's been cool to be up here with you boys for a couple days.
Yeah, we've had a good time. Jacob, how are you?
I'm doing well. Like, trying to recover right now. Mounds are something else. We're going to talk about this. Okay.
Jacob regained the title of Ginger Bow Hunter this week.
That's right.
Because he finally killed something with a bow. We're going to talk about it, baby.
Yeah. So, but no, it's been a crazy experience. I'll say this right off the bat. Newfound perspective and appreciation and respect for guys who can consistently kill deer in the mountains, like here in Virginia, or say Virginia, God, my mind's going blank. North Carolina, but all the way to Virginia, West Virginia, North Georgia, anybody that's in the mountains right there, East Tennessee, who can consistently kill a deer with a bow on public land, huge props. Huge props. Like, I appreciate it a lot more now. Like, back then, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, man, yeah, it's difficult. Dude, after coming out here doing it for a little bit, I'm like, listen, it's a different level, I think, of woodsmanship to be able to get that deer in range and also deal with the elevation.
Dude, I'll say this, which, you know, we're going to talk about how the hunt went down and targeting feed trees specifically in a big woods mountain setting. But just from a terrain standpoint, we've hunted Wyoming twice. One of those times, we were straight up in the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah, 8,200 feet.
8,200 feet. And it was challenging because of the altitude. But I'm going to go way out on a limb here and say that the actual terrain itself is more challenging here than it was there. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that because the terrain there, like, we had hiking trails and stuff that we were able to go on.
It was steep, but it wasn't terrible.
It wasn't that bad.
It was the elevation.
It was firm ground. Here, it's just as steep. The hills are super tall. And you've got like a foot of leaf duft and soft dirt that you're trying to walk on. And it's like coming out from under you. And there's like crap you got to climb over. Out there, you're walking through like sagebrush or other, you know, the ground's a little bit easier to navigate. So North Carolinians, you should be proud. Or really anybody in the Appalachian Mountains. Like, it is rugged.
It's rough.
It's super rough, man.
It's like, that should be the title of this episode. It's rough, okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, no.
Which I'm sure there's stuff out west that's a lot worse. So before everyone jumps on me.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
But where we hunted, like, you know, we were in the mountains. And it sucked because of the altitude mostly. Mm-hmm. But, dude, imagine if this stuff was like 8,000 feet. That would suck. There wasn't that much oxygen up here.
Cat me out, bro. Cat me out. I'm like, listen, so Zach, you weren't part of that conversation, but last night we were driving back from hunting, and I told Andrew, I'm like, I cannot wait for the Kansas hunt where we're in flat land. Like, I'm so excited.
The one thing I was thinking about after this whole deal, like, you know, I was like, where you guys want to go in the morning? Like, we're just going to get some work done. I was just thinking, then I come off today and I got back to the vehicle and I was like, okay, my legs are officially toast. And you guys got here before I did too. And the thing I was thinking about on the drive over here, it's like, the coolest thing about this hunt for you guys, I think you'll take away from it, is like, for the rest of the year, any hunt you do, you'll be like, this is cakewalk compared to what we did. And it's kind of like, gets you in the mindset, you're like, oh, I got to go here and here, or like, just a little bit of a challenge. It's kind of like, you've already done that, and it should be cakewalk, and I think that'll be neat for you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, when you do something super difficult, everything else that you thought was difficult is not nearly as difficult as you actually now know it is.
Look, Jacob had some mental breakthroughs this week. Like, something clicked in his brain. Now he's gonna be like all David Goggins about everything.
That's not at all true, but definitely it's like, you know, anytime I do something physical back home, like, you know, if we're hiking wherever, it's like, this is not as bad as North Carolina. Just keep telling. Hey, the funny thing, so first day we were out here, we'll kind of get into a little bit of the conversation about everything, but Andrew kind of took me a little bit on a death walk, death march, as we call it.
Yep.
Did some big loops covering a couple different ridges. And there was a certain point when we dropped down off the first ridge system on the mountain and we decided to go up the next one after we found some real good sign. Dude, like, coming down, it was like just steep, super soft soil. Like, you're just like sliding. I see why Stuart Keen wears baseball cleats now.
Yeah.
Like, it makes so much sense, to be honest, like extra traction. And when I got to the bottom, I looked back up that ridge. I was like, oh my God. And I was looking at the maps and I was like, because I knew where you wanted to go. And I'm like, dude, this is going to be bad. And literally the thing that came to mind is a song from Finding Nemo with Dory. It's like, just keep swimming. And I was like, just keep walking. Just keep walking. Don't stop.
That's something.
Like, literally, I was like humming it back there as I was like dying, going up this big ridge system.
So you're going the Finding Nemo route. I was going the Dumb and Dumber route where they finally hit on the road trip. You know, Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
Where they're going to Aspen. And they're like, according to the map, we've only gone this far. So like, when I'm going in anywhere, I never like to look at my Onyx. Like, I like to just put my phone away and just walk until I get tired, and then do that a couple times and maybe check my bearings a little bit. It's just kind of got to just go.
Yeah, that's why I like having my Garmin watch on, because I'll have the map pulled up on that. So it keeps me from stopping and like pulling out my phone and everything. But when we're going up those really, really steep faces, I put my hat on and I like kind of keep my head low so I can't see over the bill and I can't see how far I am from the top. And I just look at my feet and like try my best to like turn my brain off. And it's just like, just put one foot in front of the other, just walk, and you'll get there when you get there.
So with all this to say, we got into some deer.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Zach, by the way, I want to kind of preface this conversation a little bit more with you. So I first met you last year. I came up and did a podcast actually with Ryan Kirby, who's a friend of ours. And I was on his show and got to hang out with him. And you were working for Kirby at the time, correct?
That's right, yeah. I worked for him for about a year and had a great time. And so I've since moved on. But yeah, so I met you and kept in touch with you ever since.
Yeah.
And I've never told you guys this before, but when Kirby messaged you guys about the show and all, it was all me. I was running his Instagram at the time. And buddy, I was like, I told Kirby, you know, because he's out here, I was like, listen to these guys' deer hunting podcast, you'll enjoy it, because he loves podcasts. He listened to Rogan and a bunch of different guys, and it was closer to deer season, I said. So I was the one that turned him on. So obviously, since you were coming up anyways, it was cool to meet you. So yeah, I kept in touch with you, and so we traded pins and ideas back and forth as I hunted here last year. So it was really neat. When you said you wanted to come back, I was like, I'll definitely want to come back, and it was another reason for me to come back. And now I'm trying to figure out when I can come back, if not this year, next year.
So. Yeah, definitely. So the interesting thing is, you're originally from Kansas,
right? That's
right,
yeah.
You live in Iowa.
Well, my wife's a travel nurse, so we've been all over the place the last four years. But yeah, from Kansas, lived there my whole life. And then my wife and I, we officially hit the road and kind of started traveling around in 2020. But we live in Iowa now. I told her she took a recent job in Omaha and CHI, and I said, we're going to be in Omaha, we're going to live on the Missouri side of the river, because I need to get, you know, be an Iowa resident and all that. So we're going to be there for at least a year. She signed a year-long contract. But yeah, so I'm from Kansas, didn't grow up deer hunting or anything, but did the duck and goose hunting stuff. And then now the deer hunting's got me bad, and so that's why we're in Iowa. But yeah, I mean, I have some big plans this fall to do a lot of hunting, but...
Oh, yeah. So you are just from the, like I call it, the land of milk and honey, baby. I mean, Kansas, Iowa, you've got a property in Kentucky, which, you know, it's worth mentioning that it's opening weekend in Kentucky, and you drove right through Kentucky, and you came here to hunt these gigantic mountains.
Yeah.
Instead.
So my wife's family, they have a really cool property that her uncle's going to let me deer hunt this year, and he's a really cool OG guy, and he doesn't get down there too much. It's a couple hours from his house, and I was like, hey, can I bow hunt? He's like, yeah, that's fine. He's like, I got some friends who rifle hunt, you can bow hunt. So I put a bunch of men around, ended up getting some corn out, and I had some pretty nice bucks coming that I had planned on hunting opening weekend, but then my brother got my nephew shooting a crossbow and stuff, and he was all fired up about it to try to shoot his first deer, and I was like, well, that's a little bit more important than trying to come up. So I did that this last weekend, then basically Sunday night hit the road and got up here Monday, and we kind of hit the ground running up here.
So. Yeah, dude. Western North Carolina, super, super rough country. It's kind of known for lower deer densities and just being like a difficult place to hunt. So being that you're, again, from Kansas, you've got ties there. Also, you currently live in Iowa, and you got property in Kentucky. Three top-notch whitetail states. What is it that fires you up so much about North Carolina that kind of keeps you coming back to Western North Carolina? Like, you got cameras up here. You're already talking about when you can come back. You're leaving cameras up here again.
Well, I think, I mean, the mountains are just beautiful, really. And when I decided to hunt some public last year, literally, I didn't have a saddle set up or anything. I just took my bow, climbed up a big drainage. I wanted to stay around the water because, like, if I take the water up, I can take the water down and not get lost. In the first hunt last year, I actually had encounters with two big mountain bucks come off this mountain. Someone spooked them. They come past me, and I was like, I saw big chocolate horn antlers, and I go, oh, man, there's some good deer up here. I think good deer is just kind of all relative to where you're at. Like, the mature deer here are awesome. And once I saw them in person, I was like, oh, man. And then I just fell in love with the terrain and learned a lot about it. And the weather's awesome out here. And, I mean, that's kind of really it, you know. Like, once – I've just never been a hiker. Like, I have no desire in the world to go to Colorado and hike or go anywhere and hike. But if I could hike with a bow in my hand, that's super fun. And so I kind of – I don't know. I just kind of fell in love with the adventure here, really. It's more about the hunt than like really like the outcome. And I was lucky to shoot a couple of bucks here last year and kill some does too. But I got a lot. I had a lot of time to hunt, and I think the thing that's taught me the most, and I think anybody can relate to this. Any of the guys that are true killers on your podcast, the guys that have wall. Any guy that you see with a wall full of deer, well, they have had a lot of time to hunt, and that's what it takes. And so, I mean, I was able to spend a lot of time up here, and I think, you know, you guys coming here for 3 or 4 days, it's hard to imagine. Like, man, I'm gonna come up to these mountains and kill a buck. I mean, if us three loaded up right now, went to Colorado to go elk hunt, we could walk around there for the entire month of September and probably not kill an elk. And so the adventure is really what I love about this place the most. And it's the beauty of the mountains. And I like the drainages with the creek. Like when we walked in yesterday mm-hmm. afternoon, all that water running and stuff, I love that. It's just, mm-hmm. that's kind of what I like the most and to drag this answer out, I guess. But
yeah, I can relate to that, man. You're right. There is just something about the mountains that is just, it's fun to hunt, man. You feel small and it's physically challenging, but also, I mean, there's other side benefits to it as well. Some of the guys we've interviewed up here have shown us that there are gigantic deer around here. Seriously big deer around here.
The terrain allows them to get old.
Yes.
And I don't know what it is, like why the deer density isn't high. I don't know why it's not high. I mean, there's pockets of deer. I don't know why it's not high.
I need to saw some timber, buddy.
But I think I remember in one of the podcasts you guys talked about where you're at in Alabama, you're kind of in the bottom of those Appalachians, and further north you go, they get steeper. I don't know what the deer density is like where you're at, and I don't know why, but just the terrain in general just allows a deer to get old. And I just, last year when I started and I seen those deer, I was like, I want a big chocolate horn buck. Mm-hmm. And I got one, but it's like, I put a lot of time in it. So anyways, I mean, that's why I love it here. That's why I wanted to come back. You know, you could shoot a big buck in Iowa, shoot a big buck in anywhere, like a 200-inch deer or whatever, but I wanted a big chocolate horn buck out here, and when I did that, now I'm like, I kind of got a little nostalgia with it now, you know? I'd love to bring my nephews up here and stuff and maybe do like a deer camp type of a deal. I'd also really like to rifle hunt up here too, because that would be, you know, a lot of good opportunity with that as well.
So. Yeah, definitely. Jacob, will you real quick check that camera? Just make sure it's good to go. Make sure it's still recording.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, you see their little red recording
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes, 56 seconds.
Okay, cool.
It's just because of that door.
Yeah, I thought it glitched a second ago. But anyways, hey, just another, by the way, added like side benefit. You kind of touched on it, is to compare, you know, we got some buddies who are hunting Kentucky right now. Michael Pike, Shane Parker, and Talon Neal. They've been hunting Kentucky this week, and man, it's been a different hunt. Like, just talking to them, they've been dealing with a ton of pressure. They've been dealing with guys flying a bunch of thermal drones around, just like crazy hunting pressure. Pike ended up killing a nice buck. Congrats, Pike.
Really good deer.
Yeah, really, really good deer. So good for him, man. But we compare that. We were just laughing all week about it because they were talking about how, you know, the hunting pressure and everything and dealing with these drone guys. And we're up here, and it's like, I have not seen another person. I have not seen one other hunter up here. There's just so much public land. Like, not many people are bow hunting this, and it's so spread out that even the people that are bow hunting it, there's so much land that it's, I mean, you might as well have it to yourself, and the deer act like deer.
Yeah. What are the hunts called? Do you guys draw in Alabama?
What's the SOA called? Hunts.
Okay. And yep. So I think, you know, obviously, being from the Midwest, I listen to your podcast, and you're talking about thick cover and just the habitats don't really line up. But, you know, you learn, like, you know, on public land, well, down there where you guys are, there's just a ton of hunters. Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, there's a lot of hunters down there. And so those deer, with the pressure, get pushed to the cover. Well, here, the terrain is the cover, mm-hmm. you know. And I don't know enough about, like, how they travel, where they're spending the time this time of year versus like later with a leaf off. It was neat to hunt here last year and watch the seasons kind of progress. You know, I was in the trees as the leaves were falling and stuff. And so, but yeah, I mean, it's been fun for sure. So
yeah. Different experience for sure. I've had an absolute blast. It's been fun. It's been challenging, but fun. All right. So
one of my favorite things real quick, cause Andrew's been, you know, giving me crap this whole time hiking with him. Man, he's like, you gotta come on. You gotta get up here. Yesterday when we climbed up that drainage, I still don't think that was steeper than where we went that morning. Okay. But that drainage we were going up, and actually watching Andrew get winded, because I was winded too. But I was like, I feel great. Andrew's in misery too. This is perfect.
Yeah, that was the first time I got legit winded. I had to stop for a second. I was like, God.
Yesterday afternoon?
Yeah.
That spot where we, you and I hang, where those benches all come together like that?
Yeah.
That's where I just rotted away in the rut there. Like, through November, I just kept going back up there, and it was miserable. And but yeah. I would go up there and just stay up there all day and just, you know, I kept getting bucks on camera in there because the way that comes together, I think a lot of the does, well, you've seen the does coming out. Mm-hmm. And I think they bed in there, and I think those bucks know that. They just come down that and just funnels them down in there. It's a good spot to be. We got in trouble last night because the leaves in there and the way the wind was, it was swirly. But
oh,
you can take it from there.
Dude, we're going to get to that. But, like, the mountains, the inconsistency of the wind up here is impressive, actually. Because, yeah. Like, look, in hill country back home, I was telling you this last night, Zach, I can predict pretty well what the wind is going to usually do, like how it's going to eddy or how it's going to ricochet. Like, I could look at a topo map and be like, it's probably going to funnel and it's going to go this way. And most of the time, I'm pretty close. Up here, dude, it is like, I don't know what it's going to do. Like, I cannot predict it. And same with you. Yeah. I mean, Jacob's really good at that too, especially with thermals. And we get in there and you think that you're good, like the thermal switch, and you're like, oh yeah, this is money. And then like 4 minutes later, it's blowing the opposite direction. It's just, and also, at dark every night, you like at home, when it gets dark, there's never any wind. Unless you got a front coming through, there's like never any wind. But here, every night when the sun goes down, you get like a 10-minute just windy, like little section come through. It'd be real windy for like 10 minutes every single night, even when there wasn't a front. So I'm like, what is this? Anyways.
That kind of goes back to like what I mentioned earlier about props the guys that hunt this kind of terrain and are consistently successful with a bow.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it'd be even challenging with a rifle, especially with lack of cover and like just spending time out there and try to catch a buck that you're wanting to shoot. But specifically with a bow, because of how the swirling winds happen, again, it's like it's super hard to predict exactly what's going on. And then also like the elevation change. And if you're not used, like where we come from, we're used to a very certain kind of cover type. And I think it kind of bites us in the butt when you go to places where there's not that kind of cover, like super high stem count, dense cover. Because you come up here and we're like, we're walking around and we're finding beds on the, like you, we found beds everywhere. Yeah. There were so, I probably found 100 beds.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And it's in like a lot of them real big beds. And some of them are kind of in cover in like sapling thickets, which are like a joke back home. But up here is like some of the best cover we found on some of the ridges. And then on other sections, you'd have a bed on a really steep face, kind of like what Chad Grove talked about last week. Or actually, I guess it was this. No, last week.
Yeah.
These little thumbnails, these little, like, this slight flat impressions coming off the side of the ridge when it's real steep, and there would just be a big bed right there. And it's like, okay, so they're definitely using side advantage. They're looking downhill, just like Chad talked about. But also, it's like, there is so much happening with, like, in certain areas, lack of diversity, habitat diversity, it's hard to key in on. Like, you find sign, and you start looking, and it's, like, super, super subtle habitat edges. Like, it's not those, like, major transition edges we see back home where there's a lot more timber cutting. It is very subtle habitat edges that, like, to be honest, you almost have to train yourself on it. Like, after, like, a couple days into it, we're like, okay, like, we you know, we're kind of, like, you, like, actually that first day when we were, did that real big loop, again, when I was talking about singing that Dory song, you know, just keep swimming.
Yeah.
We found, like, you started talking about, like, there's a pattern we're finding where, like, there's beds in and around where there's elevation drop, but also in and around some of the sapling cover. Like, mm-hmm. in the sapling cover, just on the edge of the sapling cover, stuff like that. And there was, like, a pattern with it, and also a pattern where the beds were at close to red oaks, which played a factor. The thing is, it's like, okay, well, how do we get up here without blowing these deer off the side of the ridge and off the side of this mountain? Because you have to come up from the bottom. I mean, I'm sure, like, there's a bunch of public out here. There's some that you probably can come from the top, but, again, like, a lot of stuff that we were kind of messing around with, a lot of you're coming from the bottom, and it's like, you're walking up, and, like, the side slopes typically are wide open. Like, you could look up, and, like, you can't even see the top, because the ridge keeps rolling around, and that's probably the most depressing thing about walking these ridges. And, like, trying to go up them, it's like, oh, man, like, you know, it's, it doesn't look terrible, and you start going in, kind of like Zach, what you're talking about with Dumb Dumber, like, oh, we've only gone this far. It's like, don't even look up. Just keep looking down and just keep climbing. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's rough, but it makes it so challenging to figure out how you can get on a deer when they're bedding with sight cover on these steep slopes looking downhill, and you're trying to find the best path to travel going up, but you're exposed from every direction, specifically on afternoon hunt.
So I'll say this. Last year when I hunted here and I had a lot of time to hunt, I could find the bucks. Like, I would get into areas, and I was finding the deer around more rocky stuff, especially like as the leaves were dropping. But I would walk up, and I'd see him stand up in his rack, and he'd go off. I would see him. And so what I would do is I'd pin that. Then I would just start hanging on that spot, like hoping to catch him come back, and I could never catch back up to him. So when I come back, I was like, I'm just going to go around acorns that I marked that were good last year and hopefully catch a buck bed in that area based on the timing, because a lot of times I was finding them And, like, well, I guess that's it. It's hard because, you know, they've got a side advantage on you. And I was always – I liked hunting here in the morning better than the afternoons because it's like, well, I can hopefully beat them to the spot, whether it's feed or if it's bedding. But I just – I would find I bumped a lot of bucks last year, and I would just try to get back to them, and it's like I don't think they cared to come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we recorded last Thursday's episode, it was like the first – it was after the first day of the hunt, and we kind of outlined what we were going to try to do for the rest of the hunt. And one of the things we talked about was that afternoon we were going to go in and just hunt this spot that was kind of low impact. It's where we saw that black bear. And it's where you're going up one of these little ridge points, and the ridge point shelves off. Like, there's a nice shelf right there, and then it keeps going up. And once you approach that shelf, there's a habitat change. So you're walking up, you know, just eating this hill. We called that spot the Stairway to Hell.
Yep.
And you start walking up, and it's just wide open around, like wide open on both side slopes. And you're, I got my rangefinder out, and I'm like clicking. I'm getting like 100 yards, 110 yards on my rangefinder. And I was like, dude, they can see us from 120 plus yards away. And once you get up to a certain elevation, it changes. And now there's a bunch of nettle growing and all kinds of green plants that they're browsing on, but also saplings. And it cuts that visibility down to like 50 yards. And I'm like, let's get up to that and let's not go any further. Let's just hunt that and just see what we see. And we saw some deer that day.
Yeah.
So that afternoon, as soon as we got in, there was a doe feeding around at like 25 yards.
So yeah, we talked about that yesterday when we were riding to lunch. I was like, if you are getting deer in here in bow range, that's a win. If it's buck or doe, whatever. Like, there are pockets of deer, but that's still a win. You guys were in deer. We were in deer every day, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was only one hunt that we got skunked.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
that was the first one. We're like, we're seeing so much track, so much trail, like just trails and just, I mean, just sign that deer are here, and like the trails out here are gigantic. Dude, we would never find trails this big in Alabama.
No,
never. And it's like, and that's the crazy thing, because it's not like a ton of deer out here, but like the trails are so well used. But it's like, I think the soil also holds a track really well and really defines that trail. But we went that whole day, we never even like officially bumped any deer or we like actually heard any deer. Actually, yeah. No, we did hear one blow.
Yeah,
up on the ridge when we found all these big rubs, which we haven't talked about. In a ton of detail. I don't think we talked about that on last Thursday episode. Maybe we did. But it was so interesting seeing that, like, we weren't jumping deer up. And I think, Zach, you mentioned something maybe. I think it was you, or maybe it was Matt. Someone, one of the guys we talked to recently was talking about, like, a lot of deer up here, if they visually see you, they're not going to blow. They're just going to get up and just slip off. So, like, you won't hear them versus, like, back home.
That's what a lot of those bucks were doing. I learned when I scouted, I would learn to look. You have to look up as you walk up. If you're like, oh, maybe there's going to be a buck up there, you have to look up, and they'll just get up and just go.
Yeah, I think that's what was happening. Because, like, we mentioned this on last Thursday's episode, but as we were scouting through there that day, and we walked a lot that day. We gained 800 feet of elevation, lost 400, then climbed 600 more.
And when we say gained 800, it was over, I think it was 800 yards.
Over like 1 mile or so?
No, it was less than that, because I mapped out an Onyx. But it averaged like
it was like 1 foot per yard or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it was close to 1 foot per yard. But the thing is, there were some flat spots we walked. So there was like some spot.
Yeah.
You'd be standing there, and I was joking. I think I joked about this on last Thursday's episode. You would look up, and I'm literally, you're looking up here, and you're like, you're seeing the bottom of a root ball. And I'm like, we're trying to get to that. Like, it's not like I'm looking at trunks of trees. Like, you're looking at the root ball, dude. Like, it's like hanging off the side of the mountain. That's what we're trying to get to. It's terrible.
Yeah, buddy. Hey, so, that'll put hair on your peaches.
When we were riding to lunch yesterday, you mentioned about how you wanted to spend enough time walking. You wanted to look and kind of get it. Everyone just talks about finding sign. Well, feed sign, whatever it is, rubs. You guys found a lot of stuff. Some of those rubs you guys found were impressive. And so you had some quality sits. You said you'd rather have a couple quality sits versus just a bunch of crappy ones.
Yeah.
So let's kind of segue this to where I hunted here last year, and it was hard for me to find spots. I was finding deer. I would try to hunt them down. You know, say this was just a scouting trip for you, okay? Well, I have a year here, and you were here for 4 days. You found some great stuff. You're trying to capitalize. It's early season. You're hoping that the sign you find, the deer are close. So then if you would come back, would you do like what I did? Start where you left off, where you found the best stuff? That's the most, you know, so you say, as any listener out there that's like, I'm in here, I'm finding sign, like I got a week, or I'm only hunting the weekends 3 days. And so you make a big loop. You scout, you have all the time, put the miles on, you find the sign. You maybe go back to it. what I kept mentioning to you was like, if this stuff is your best stuff, just camp out there. Because I feel like the deer, they're just doing their thing. Like, if a buck come through, made a bunch of rubs, and is maybe feeding in there or whatever, in my opinion, my strategy here was just like, I'm going to rot away there. And it's hard to do that because you're like, well, I just want to go look over the next ridge. I want to go find something else, which it's hard to say, well, how good is this? And be confident enough to stay. But that's maybe what I've maybe learned from you guys. Because you guys really, I will say this, like, I was really impressed with the amount of like effort you guys put into it. And just like, you guys know your stuff. I want you to do some more mapping stuff. I love listening to your mapping stuff. You can pick it out and like, this is where I want to go and be decisive about it. But I feel like once you find it, oh, well, now I want to go look for this. So how would you do that? How would you, you know, so you, if you come back, say you want to come back this year, where would you start? And then if you find, so say you get into some more sign, then how would you pick that apart? Would you want to keep looking and keep bouncing every single day? Or would you want to just camp on the spot?
I'll take it first. Because I think we are planning on coming back. Not this year, but definitely probably next year. The way that I would do it when we come back is I would actually do it similar to how we've done it on this hunt. So I would probably come in, and the first thing I would do is check the spots I know that are good based on what I found on this trip. So I'd go straight up the Stairway to Hell. I'd walk up there to where those rubs were. I'd check that, check the licking branches we found, and kind of just assess it. And then maybe like on day two, I would go check some stuff that we didn't make it to on this trip, specifically some of those topo hubs, those ridgetop hubs, because we're coming back in the rut next time. I would go check some of those, and then I would just kind of weigh my options from there. But one of the mental games, I think, up here is like, you've just got to be willing to go up there and hike and suffer and then camp on that spot for a couple days, because these woods are so big and so open that I think these deer cover a lot of ground based on, you know, what we've seen, but also the people that we've talked to who know what they're doing. These deer are covering ground, so I think it takes time in these spots. Like, if you go sit a spot for 2 days and don't see anything, I don't think that you should necessarily move on from that spot.
But can any listener apply that to anywhere they go?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but if you're hunting feed trees, like, they're just going to constantly change. I've learned that in a big way. They're going to prefer one tree for a while. Mm-hmm. And you might want to try to get on it. But like, say, okay, your guys are going to Kansas, right? Same deal. You're going to check your spots. You're going to do your thing. And then you're just going to be able to commit. From what I've learned from listening to you and being with you, you just have a hard time committing to stuff.
No, you're 100%. So it's funny. I was going to bring this up because I get my thought on this too. But when we were recording our episode with Chad Grove, I was cutting some clips up today. And Andrew actually made a comment about like how easy it could be in early season, because we were talking about specifically like our Georgia hunt, or our last two Georgia hunts, the last two early season hunts we've done the last 2 years in September, like how easy you could walk by a spot that's got some feed sign, but there's no rubs, and you just assume there's no bucks coming to it. And we kind of found that in one area where we actually found some really, really impressive rubs on the side slope of where a bunch of red oaks were dropping. And there's some feed sign, a little bit of feed sign up there, but and it's one of those things that we sat on one morning and then kind of bounced and kind of kept scouting around. And I think part of one reason why we bounced around a good bit was trying to learn the area more so when we come back, we have a better lay of the land, how the cover lays out, all that kind of stuff. My thought specifically like coming into this hunt was, first off, like I told Andrew, like I want to come, I'm bring my bow, I'm going to film him for a little bit, and then maybe we can split off at some point because I'll try to get some footage. But also coming into like a hunt like this, knowing you're going up into the mountains and it's not high deer density, there is a lack of habitat diversity, at least that you can see on aerial imagery. Like it's a lot of boots on the ground, and it's going to change throughout the season. Within a month, you know, when leaves start falling up here, it's going to be completely different from where it is now. And like the cover is going to be different. They're going to go back to like the rhododendron thickets and Mount Laurel thickets and all that kind of stuff. But the big thing is, if we were going to come back again early season up here, I would focus exclusively on feed sign. And feed sign around some kind of terrain feature, like a side, like a big side slope to a ridge that's real rock, like what you're talking about, real rocky, Zach, where a buck could bed up, you know, have some cover, but not necessarily look so much at the long travel patterns, but just like, where's the hottest food sign? Where can we find that? And again, based off the maps and what we already know about the elevation, how everything lays out, predicting where the deer could be bedding and setting up on that food source.
Well, I would just say, even here, like, checking the stuff that I had seen in the past, like I went back to the spots that I learned last year. there's feed sign there. It's still hard for me to really commit to it. And that's, I think everybody, if you're hunting feed, I think that's the hardest thing for anybody. Like, what is the hot tree? Like, and then you got to sit. And even if it's hot, is the buck going to come back in there?
Well, or is there even a buck there if you don't have trail camera data? And that's another big aspect. Like, when you come to a new area like this, it's until we found those rubs, we're like, we don't know for sure if there's any bucks up here. Like, we found some nice tracks, but like, we're not overly confident until we found those rubs. And, you know, we found some big beds, but that doesn't tell me a whole bunch. I mean, you could have a doe down there, it's just kind of shifting around. But once you find specific, like those rubs, or maybe some larger droppings, or find a really big track, you're like, okay, there's something going on here, and try to find a pattern. But I think it's like the challenge when you're going to a hunt like this, that's short, like, it's first off, it's habitat and terrain that, like, you know, we talk about, like, we've hunted mountains. We've never hunted mountains like this.
No.
Not even close.
No.
Like, we've hunted hills compared to what this
is. I'm not going to call our mountains anymore.
Yes, no, it is foothills compared to this stuff. But it is definitely, like, the perspective, I think, like, going to a hunt like this is, and we talk about this a good bit on the podcast, or this is my thought, if you're going to go hunt someplace, you need to invest enough time into it and hopefully figure out, is this something that you're going to come back to again, whether it's this season or next season? If it is, you need to be paying attention, taking really good notes, really running your tracker on Onyx, make sure you really know where you've been and what you're seeing and document it all, so that if you're not successful on that first trip, when you come back and you decide to come back based off what you found, you have a very good lay of the land, at least on the sections that you walked, and you have a good idea of at least what it was like during that time frame. And then, hey, when we transition to maybe the rut, it's going to be different, because I found a spot that I want to hunt during the rut, which is this steep creek drainage that dropped off the mountain. It had, I mean, everything. Thick cover on one side, the top of the ridge as it kind of came up to the mountain itself was just like thicker cover. And then the drainage, like the tip of that drainage, there was another thick line of cover. There's like four edges that all came together in this one area, and it was open at the head of the drainage, but there's tracks and trails, everything running through that, and old rubs. And I think we found a scrape there as well.
Yeah.
And it just set up so good where you could sit up on like the tip of that drainage, like high up, and look down into it, but also watch the side slopes around you. Again, you got one ridge paralleling you. You got another ridge system kind of paralleling you on the other side. You got the mountain to your back. You got a bunch of different stuff right there and just set up. And again, it's one of those areas, I think if you gave it 2 or 3 days, you'd kill a buck right there. And that's the big thing. Because also another challenging thing about early season, and we've learned this now 3 years into doing these trips, these early season trips, is you cannot guarantee on finding a lot of rubs, or like there's a lot of bucks on, period. Like, you're just not going to find it. It's super hit or miss. I'm sure you can get in pockets, kind of like what we found, that one pocket where there's four or five really nice rubs. Big one of them's gigantic rub. You snapped this beech sap, and it's like 7 foot tall, snapped it chest high, and just destroyed the whole thing. But it's one of those things that you got to go and focus. If you're doing that early season hunt, it is food source first.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to hear about this on another episode we're going to record in a little while, but food source first, and then start bouncing around from that based off the sign you're finding, specifically tracks, if you can find tracks. But again, it's tough up here. Some of the ridges we get on, it would hold a track really, really well. And Zach, we saw that when we were packing out and coming down the mountain, found a spot where there was a big old buck track crossing this drainage.
Yep.
But then there's other parts you'd hunt on part of the mountains, and it's so rocky, we couldn't find tracks. Like, we were like, there's no deer sign here, but they might have been. We just couldn't see it because the ground was so rocky.
Yeah, it was like real subtle deer sign. And it's like, there might be a lot more deer coming through here than we think, but we just can't tell because it's so rocky. And I'll tell you what, also, by the way, this trip, going back to the map thing, this trip was a gigantic confidence booster for me with the map.
You're good. A lot of,
like, because we immediately got in the deer.
So the job you just left to do this full time, congrats. I'm proud of you for doing that.
Appreciate
that, leap
man.
Of faith. But you did a lot of mapping for work, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're a map guy, and you gave me confidence. And when I was hunting last year, when you would take the time to text me back and say, hey, I like this, or I'd be in this area, what do you think? And you're really good with it. So out here, it exaggerates everything so much out here. Mm-hmm. So you know, you're like, oh, I look at this, you get in there, like, here's the sign. Mm-hmm. Whether it's old rut sign or whatever, you can play off terrain features, like during the rut or pre-rut, in how I killed my big buck in that funnel. Like, you just have to ride away. And I want you guys to take that to Kansas with you. However you guys decide to do, you have to kind of commit to I just call it rotting away. Like, I'm going to pick a tree, and maybe if I want to hop to another one to get a little bit of change of scenery, a big buck's going to come through there.
Yeah. And you know, that's a really good point, because we've had some guys on who have talked about how your first time in is your best time in. And we got a Q&A submission in the hopper about this. But we're going to save it because I don't have my Q&A's pulled up right now. But we get questions about that. Like, hey, first time in is your best time in. And I think that's true but it's situational. Like, it depends. Because if you're going in and you kind of know where they're bedded and they bed consistently and you're being aggressive and you're pushing in, like, yeah, I could see your first time in being your best time in. But most of the time, when you're hunting these rut funnels and stuff, or when you're hunting like big country like what we're hunting right now, or just areas that deer aren't necessarily coming to every day, I don't really feel like that's the case. Like, sometimes if you get too much in that mindset, and I'm 100% speaking from experience here, like, I think this has messed me up over the years. If you get in that mindset of first time in is best time in, then you're going to bounce around so much that it's going to make it a lot harder to actually kill something.
100%. But that comes with experience as a hunter and growth as hunter. And just kind of when you're bow hunting, you just have to be – you have to accept you're going to be wrong a lot. And you might be right. You might have the spot, but you're not there on the day he's there. Mm-hmm. And you could run trail cameras in there. Here he is. Just like that straight to the trail camera mm-hmm. pictures I had. There's a scrape in there. I left a camera since last November. Had a couple of nice bucks on it. So it's like you just have to pick the spot. And the older guys who are good, they're going to be on some of those spots before the bucks come through there.
That, and they also know ahead of time of what spots, like their honey holes. Like, we got one in the hopper, an episode in the hopper that come out in October that we recorded on this trip. And he specifically talks about that. He's a big mountain hunter. And he's like, you know, I've got enough confidence in my spots. I'll give them maybe two sits. If it doesn't happen, because I have so much confidence around certain date ranges, if it doesn't happen then, I've got other ones I know are about to come in. And it's like maybe just that year there's not a mature buck there because he doesn't run really any cameras. So, you know, there's a flow to it, I think. But specifically, like you're talking about Kansas, it's like finding the best rut funnel with sign, tracks, and specifically doe traffic. And like the time frame we're going to be there when bucks are getting back on their feet cruising and everything, it's like you're going to have to sit some of that stuff out because you keep bouncing around. You could be one day behind or before that when that buck shows up, and then you just go a whole hunt. You like to see a few deer, but if you would have locked down on a couple really good terrain features and funnels and actually sat up and just say, hey, we're sitting daylight to dark 3 or 4 days in a row on a specific feature, that's when you're probably going to have success. And that's what you see a lot more in the Midwest. You don't see a lot of guys in the South talk about that. But in the Midwest, you see that a ton from guys on different, you know, media outlets talking about like, man, I had a spot. I sat there for 6 days in a row, 7 days, 10 days in a row, and finally killed that buck because he wasn't coming through until, you know, mm-hmm. that ever so often.
So I will say this, going back to your point about people asking about first set, best set, or kind of ride the hole a little bit. Well, and also you have to really consider your doe density. Like, how's your wind doing? Where's your wind going? Are does going to mess your hunt up? Like, if you're just trying to kill a mature buck or just bucks in general, I mean, you know, if you're getting in an area where you might try to be a little bit of aggressive on a spot, but you get a couple different does blowing on you or just kind of raising havoc, that could kind of mess you up a little bit. And I think that's something to consider, you know. It's just the doe density, the deer density in general. I got a buddy in Maryland. He's like, he's finding some deer. I'm like, go after him. He's like, I cannot let my wind go in here. There's so many does. And when he come to Kansas last year, he's like, this is the lowest deer density I've ever hunted. And I'm like, wow, that's like, this is just normal for me, you know? And so I think that's something like, whether any of your listeners in the South, like, consider that as well, as like, how big is your deer density versus like, if you're picking a spot to go into to sit.
That's a really good rabbit hole to go down, specifically on some of the mountain guys that we've talked to who don't care about the wind. They're all hunting low deer density. And it's like, what's the chance that 90-degree wedge my scent cone's going out to, like where my scent's going, is the spot in that 360-degree circle around me that buck's going to come from? And it's because there's so few deer, it's like not as big of a deal versus if you're not really high deer density area, you're going to get busted all the time.
Well, so where we sat last night, it just that real tight funnel. That's how I'm pushing the issue every time. Whether you want to give the buck his wind or not, mm-hmm. I'm going to push the issue to some sort of a pinch every single time, because if I see him, I want him to be in bow range.
Yeah.
You know, and you can do that with the terrain here. And that's what in my opinion, what you should look for in Kansas too. Like, what's really going to bring in bow range? Because you could sit in Kansas with binoculars and see bucks running everywhere. You could drive around during the rut and see bucks every day. But how are you going to get them within 30 yards? And that's the challenge.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And also going back to just learning your area really well, you mentioned earlier that I said to you earlier this week, I'm like, I would rather have like two really good hunts than four or five mediocre or bad hunts. And so that's kind of the mindset we took. I mean, we didn't have very long to hunt because we're doing all these interviews up here. And I was like, you know what, let's just walk. And we walked a lot. And that's why Jacob probably doesn't like me anymore.
No, it's all good. I'm fine now.
You're going to take this
hunt. I keep giving Jacob crap.
You're going to take this hunt and this week. And this, you're going to probably have one of the best deer seasons ever. I said, you're going to have the best opening week of deer season. This trip was going to be fun. Mm-hmm. And that's what I hope it ended up being for you guys. But you're going to take it home. And anything you get into and faced with this year, Dave, you're going to bring your David Goggins out. and the Ninja Bow Hunter's back officially. Yeah. I told Andrew, I was like, I'm calling him Red Rider, the nickname Red Rider, until he kills another deer with a bow.
Yeah.
And you did that. We even talked about that.
Yeah. We're about to get to it. So learning the area too, when me and Jacob walk, after we set up on those rubs, we had a little doe come by. She, you know, got 14 yards from us. And then that we didn't see her. We got set up before daylight. We saw her at 11:50. Like, so that's how long we were sitting in that spot, because we're like, these deer are going to come back in here and we're just going to be amongst them. And we saw that deer and hadn't seen anything else. And we were like, what do we want to do? Do we want to stay on this? And then we kind of decided that we wanted to go look a little bit more. We'd had a different doe or deer.
You sexist deer. Well, listen, Andrew, every time he hears a deer blow, it's always a doe. I'm like, how do you know it was a doe?
Yeah, it might have been a buck. I don't know. But one blew at us from below. And this slope below us is where those rubs were kind of going to, and it's really steep, and it's got a lot of saplings and rhododendron on it. And I was like, you know what, let's go loop through there, because I think that they're probably on that side slope. Because those rubs were super fresh, but they were definitely a couple days old. The leaves, where he snapped that sapling in half, the leaves had withered a little bit, so I'm like, it's probably at least 3 days old. So maybe this wind that we had blew a bunch of feet out of the trees lower down, and we should go down there and see what we could get into. And we were trying to find more white oaks, and we were finding like zero white oaks higher up on the ridges. And so we looped down and we walked through this area. And now after walking it and walking other stuff, I'm like, that area is money. It looks so good.
It's just rocky. It's hard to see sign.
Yeah. But big trails in it.
There's trails, side hill, and going up, and there ended up being a white oak.
Yep.
One of the only American white oaks we found.
Is that the one you talked about trying to go to this morning? I might go back there.
Yeah, that spot looked good, and hindsight is 20/20. We shouldn't have walked past it, you know. And I said that on Chad Groves' episode. I'm like, dude, like it could be easy to walk past stuff like that, but you don't know until you do that. You don't know until you do walk past
something.
And
I would say to
hunted.
Any of your listeners, like any big buck killer you – any guest you have that's mm-hmm. killed a lot of deer, they've made the same mistakes. It's like you have to – it's like real experience. You have to see it. You have to be able to make a decision on the sign you see. And you can be wrong even if it's the best sign and that's just – I've learned a lot about mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we wrap around to this ridge point, and this ridge point, we bump a doe off of it. And it was that ridge point is probably it, like as far as just killing a deer, doe or buck, I think it's probably the best spot that we found all week. And we walked past that one too.
Okay. I was thinking about the one with the other fawn, the last ridge point.
The other fawn.
But yeah, we you thought it was a coyote that ran in on us while we were sitting there.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm talking about the bottom of that same ridge point, where it kind of shelves out. It's a That was a good spot. Like the feed sign there was super heavy. There was a bunch of tracks in there.
Feed sign specific on the red oaks.
Specific on the red oaks. And we walked past it on that afternoon hunt. And as soon as we left, I was like, we should have probably set up on that. Like we bumped the deer, but we had walked through so much. I'm like, I think we kind of screwed it up for today. So we'll come back to it. So then the next morning, that's where I went. And I got in there before daylight, like way before daylight. And when I was walking in, I walked past some does. And they just let me walk past them. When I got up there, there was already a deer standing on it. I couldn't tell what it was, but it bumped off. As I'm setting up in the dark, I've got deer walking all around me. I'm like, ah, dude, this is it. And on that hunt, I had several does come within bow range. And I chose not to shoot them. But going back to your point earlier, by the way, I think this is like a really, really good point to bring up here in early season. As people are going in, we talk about bucks all the time, but like, dude, going up into these mountains and getting just does and bow range on almost every hunt, I feel pretty freaking good about that. Like, and you were saying when we were hunting, you're like, you have to psych yourself up about that kind of thing. Like, you have to make yourself be excited about it.
You have to give yourself a win.
Yeah.
You have to give yourself a win.
You can't be like, oh, I didn't see a mature buck. This sucks. You know, I had very low expectations for this hunt, but we had deer in bow range almost every single hunt. Mm-hmm. Every single hunt except one, we had deer in bow range. And so I'm like, okay. Like, that makes me feel good, dude.
Yeah.
Makes me feel really good.
Yeah. Especially in a lower deer number area, deer density area. And, the challenge of reading that sign so early in the season, especially when you get in those rocky areas, like, you don't see, the tilled up ground. Like, we never found tilled up, feed trees because mm-hmm. there's not enough deer for that. But you'd find all the punch holes. You'd find the notch caps. You'd find some crunched up acorns. You'd find a little bit of droppings, tracks, all that kind of stuff. But, that white oak you were talking about, it was in a very rocky area. There was white oaks on the ground, a few of them, some caps, a big trail, there was two big trails that went below that tree, probably 40 yards below that tree, and there was one big trail that went right up next to that white oak and went straight up to the ridge right where that big sign was, all those big rubs. And we were probably 250 feet below that ridge line.
Yep.
And like all that sign was there, and it was just thick up above it. And, you know, that's one of those things that you're talking about, like not knowing what to walk past. It's almost like you got to keep doing that until you get that gut feeling like this is what I need to sit on.
Yeah.
Because like to a new listener out there, someone that's like not super experienced, and even guys like us who's been, you know, hunting for, you know, most of our lives, you know, we're not the oldest guys by any means. You don't know what it like how good that sign is until you walk past it, and then you just you know in your gut like I made a mistake.
Yeah.
And then you learn from that moving forward when you run across that opportunity, or you go back to the tree the next day. Like mm-hmm. it just is what it is. Mm-hmm. Especially early bow season. Like I was telling Zach when we were hunting, the early bow season when you have all the cover, like yeah, the swirling wind sucks, but like you can hide so easy early season and get a deer so close because you have so much cover and they're not constantly looking up. Plus these deer up here don't get enough pressure, it seems like, where they're like a lot of Alabama deer sketched out, just like looking up at all the trees, especially those big nanny does.
Dude, there was this one doe that walked by me on that ridge point, mm-hmm. and she got directly downwind of me. And like she had come from like in front of me, and she had swung all the way around, and she got right behind me, and she hits my wind stream or my scent stream, and she's like throwing her nose up, and she's like looking, and she's smelling, and she just keeps going. Like she was like, oh, there's a guy somewhere over there, whatever. And I was like, man, the deer at home would have been gone. I mean, she would have freaking turned inside out and ran away. But this deer is like, whatever. It's probably a hiker or something. I don't know. So that was pretty interesting,
yeah,
for sure. By the way, another thing I just want to mention real quick, because we get a lot of questions on just getting on does and how to kill does. And I think that if you're in one of these like big woods mountain setups, I think one thing that we found works really, really well this week is getting on those ridge points and picking a side. So this ridge point in particular, the way it sets up is it comes down off the main mountain. It comes down big long ridge point, and the western facing slope of that ridge point runs north and south. The western facing slope is where the saplings, some rhododendron and stuff was, and then the eastern facing slope was a little bit more open. And so I accessed from that eastern facing slope using the terrain as my cover, and it's like a good analogy for it is like the corner of a house or something. Like if Jacob was walking around the corner of the house and I wanted to scare him, I would get around the other corner, you know, and hide there. And when he comes around, be like, ugh. Dude, it's like you're doing that with the deer. You're kind of getting right there on that corner and you're using that terrain and they're bedding with a side advantage, but they're on the other side of that ridge point, and you just ease up and you catch them as they're swinging around that ridge point. That worked really good on mm-hmm. this hunt. I feel like that's an excellent way to especially just get on some does, but I could see bucks coming through that location, you know, just because there's not a rub right there doesn't mean that the bucks aren't coming to it. And some of the feed tree guys that we've talked to, mostly flatland guys, but still, I think it holds true. Like if you're just where most of the deer are, the bucks are probably coming to it at some point, especially when it's as low pressure as this.
Funny thing. And I know Zach's got a point he wants to bring up, but, the first night when Zach, when you pulled up, and you told us that you drove ever have like 12, 13 hours, whatever it was to come over here from Kansas. We were sitting there and you're like, you know, you were asking us like where we were hunting. Like, oh, we're going way up here on this big ridge. He's like, dude, we can kill bucks way lower in elevation. I'm pretty certain. I'm like, dude, there was like a twinkle in my eye. I was like, I'm like, please. Like, shit. Like, where do we go, man? Like, that would be amazing.
Dude, we were pulling up to the parking lot before daylight. And Jacob was being like real quiet the whole drive over there.
This is the second day.
The second day. And then we like, I whip into the parking lot. Jacob's like, dude, I'm so anxious right now.
This is gonna eat this, dude. You pull up and like you go when you go to park, and if it's daylight or whatever, like you just look up there and like you can't see the top. Like you literally can't see the top. Like you just see where it starts rounding over, but there's still 600 feet of elevation behind it.
Oh, dude. The worst part is you look up and like you see like trees, like you see the tops of trees, but then you look like kind of through those trees and you see dirt behind them, and you're yeah. like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, it's brutal, dude. It's brutal.
Oh,
but like
so
when
steep.
Zach, when you brought that up, like, man, we kill bucks lower. I was like, oh please. Like, where do we go, man? Like, well,
I would say that too, to any, you know, any guys in the South hunting, like I would say early season, I would definitely hunt the obvious stuff. Like go like food plots or whatever. Like maybe you're not set up on the food plot, or maybe like, but they're probably not being pushed back in the back. Mm-hmm. You know, they might be right there. They might be right underneath your like fingertips, but you might not know it. You just got to go in there and look.
So I thought, actually, I thought that when me and Andrew were hiking up there and like just gaining a bunch of elevation and going over all those ridges that first day. I'm like, why would a buck? Now the habitat was pretty good back there. A lot of browse pressure. We found the tracks and sign, but it's like, of all the stuff around here, they haven't really been pushed. So, like, what would draw them to like one of these big ridge points, much higher in elevation than anything else around it, compared to some of the lower elevation of smaller ridges? And that's probably a good point to think about when you're going to one of these situations. Is if the pressure hasn't been on, like, if it was gun season, different story. Okay, you know, there's a lot more people walking around. You know, when I say a lot more, it's relative to your area, especially like up here. But it's like, why would they be higher in elevation right now? And to me, it'd have to be because like the food is that good at that high of elevation. If the food's not up there, they're not going to be there. Like, I just don't think that's, especially this early in the season where they're just browsing, they're feeding on acorns and doing all that kind of stuff. And it's like, we found, again, feed sign and big tracks lower in elevation, but it's like, you don't know, is that nighttime sign? Is that during the day? It's like, you don't really know until you set up on it, especially when you're not using trail cameras. Because we came up here, don't have any trail cameras out. You know, you're just walking in blind, trying to hunt an area and scout around. So you don't really know necessarily at what elevation are they daylight active at. And, and you know, we kind of found it a little bit of everywhere, but it definitely seemed like that lower third of the mountain seemed like to be like the hot spot right now. A lot of vegetation in certain areas, a lot of browse. I mean, we found areas, you didn't bring this up, Andrew. We found one area with two giant beds on one of those thumbnails on the side of this big ridge. And it was all that stinging nettle, wood nettle, whatever. And it was browse. Like, tell me, that stuff would grow like waist high. Mm-hmm. And we were walking through stuff that was waist high or higher. And it was browse to knee high the whole side slope. Yeah. I mean, it was probably 2 acres. The whole thing was browsed down. And I'm like, well, they've clearly been in here and the food quality is that good for them to browse through here. But that might have been from a month ago when they were really browsing on that super heavy.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, oaks drop. And they're like, well, I'm going to try to shift to wherever the oaks are dropping at the heaviest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And man, we found a lot of them dropping. Let's talk about the successful hunt that y'all had. Jacob killed him a deer, buddy. So, killed him a deer.
Yeah, yesterday. So like the night before, we were trying to figure out what we're going to do.
And you've just been filming me up to this point.
Yeah. Another big mistake. Day one, we got out there when we did the death march. Like, we get out of the truck, and you're like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to leave my bow. He's like, no, you can bring your bow if you want to. And I got a little selfish. I'm like, I'll bring the bow. Why? Like, I'm filming. Like, so I've packed around all that extra weight in my backpack, which, you know, that bow probably 7 pounds, 8 pounds, something like that, nine pounds fully loaded. And that was like, I'm like, I'm not taking the bow again unless I'm actually going to hunt. Okay. If I'm filming, that's staying in the truck. Like, I'm just not doing it. And that last day, that night, you were telling me, like, hey, Zach said you can go hunt with him. He's got a spot. And I think Zach, you put in the group message. And I'm like, all right, cool. So we'll go meet up and kind of figure all that stuff out. And Zach, you'd already shared us a spot because I think you'd been there the day before.
So I hunted close to there.
Yeah.
You know, I hunted not as high in elevation. But then when I got down, I went up there and looked, and I was like, I found some fresh droppings and stuff. And the acorns, there was two different varieties of acorns in there. And I was like, you know, it's hard for me to convince you guys to go. But I was like, Jacob needs a chip shot. Send him with me.
Yeah, because me and you have been talking. We got a group message with all three of us, but me and you were talking independently, and we're like, we need to get Jacob a W. We need to, because I want Jacob to like this place.
Yeah,
because I want to come back here.
You know, I mean, obviously, you guys are here for a purpose, but you still want to have fun.
Yeah.
So I was like, send him with me. We need a chip shot. I blew a bunch of does out of there on those acorns. I was like, I think we can shoot something.
So. Well, it's like I had the full guide experience, you know, pull it up, you know, I had the hot breakfast ready, coffee. No, not really. That would have been awesome, though. get that tip going. But so you had shared the pin, and I'm like, okay, I was looking on the maps. I'm like, okay, this doesn't look terrible. Like, compared to where we've been at, you know, we start hiking, start walking, going up this, you know, skitter trail, kind of get up in elevation. And it was kind of funny because we're doing it, and this is like I think that was day four of the hunt. And, dude, I'm, like, smoked at this. Dude,
I think it was day five. Haven't we been here 5 days?
It all runs together.
I think it was day five.
Sunday. No.
No, we got here Saturday. We got here on Saturday.
Oh, crap. But, yeah, it was day five. Okay, day five, hiking these mountains. So, dude, I'm, like, smoked at this point. I'm not going to lie. Dude, legs. I had blisters.
Oh, he's got some serious blisters.
Yeah. So, anyways, I had to double up on socks. I don't have any duct tape for them. So, we start going up this skitter trail, and I'm, like, it's not terrible. Oh, the biggest thing, we didn't even talk about this. Night one, after the first hunt on Sunday, when Zach showed up, he had a gift for us.
Oh.
Which made the biggest difference of this whole trip.
Oh, yeah.
I was looking out for you guys. I learned that last year. I was like, I guarantee they'll never even think about this.
No, we absolutely did not.
It didn't even think about it. And you were like, hey, guys, I got you a gift. And I'm like, I don't know what he's going to get us. Like, whatever. He comes out and you get two trekking poles. And I'm like, thank God. Like, dude, this is going to be, oh, my gosh. Because, like, dude, when you're going up that steep slope, it was like, especially with all your gear on you, like all your shadow equipment, sticks, platform, all that stuff. Like, dude, after a little while, you get tired and you're like, you know, your feet aren't working great, legs ain't working great, and you're like trying to, you know, stabilize yourself. Well, you know, that trekking pole, dude, changed the game, okay? Because that next day, that's when we went in there. I told Andrew I was anxious, and we ate that freaking. I mean, it took us 50 minutes to get to where we needed to,
yeah.
Which was a lot faster. I thought it was going to take us an hour and a half, to be honest, okay?
Oh, yeah, I know, because when you were like, how long do you think it's going to take to get in there? I was like, about an hour, and he was like,
I'm like, there ain't no way we're getting there in an hour. And we actually did it in 50 minutes, but the trekking pole helped out a bunch.
You have little faith.
We started using the trekking pole the whole hunt, and it was amazing. Like, I'm never going to hunt any kind of mountains again without a trekking pole.
I bet you use it anywhere. It's like, yeah. Good for breaking brush, too, man.
Yeah, and move stuff
spider
out of the way.
Stick.
You know, watch for snakes, flicking sticks, snakes out of the way, which, by the way, this area looks really snaky. We ain't seen a snake yet, which I've been very happy with.
Oh, yeah. I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to jinx it till after the hunt, you know. But I was like, how have we not run into a rattlesnake yet?
Oh, yeah. It screams rattlesnake country. But anyways, we were walking that logging road and using the trekking pole. But, dude, I was still getting smoked. And it wasn't that, like, steep at all compared to everything else. It was funny because, like, when we were coming back out, I'm like, oh, I can't believe I was dying on this thing. Like, as I'm walking back down, I'm like, this ain't bad at all. But, dude, I was so burnt out that morning. And we go up, and it was funny because we had to get to this certain point, and Zach's like, hey, we got to cut off this because we gotta you know, cross up this ridge and get on this bear trail. And he's like, this will be like some of the steepest stuff we're walking. I'm like, okay. And I looked up it. I'm like, okay, this is steep. But, you know, we got this cut bank. We got to go up it. We get up and, you know, cross, you know, got on this bear trail, ran this bear trail through some thick cover, get out the other side, got on this ridge point, started walking this ridge point. And, dude, I'm telling you, I'm gassed. And this ridge point's not that steep at all. And we're just, like, going up. And finally, we get to the certain spot. And Zach, by this time, you know, Zach's a little taller than me, way better shape, got these long legs, okay? And it's like Andrew 2.0. Like, Andrew can walk me into the dirt, okay? Like, every time we go hiking or something, like, if it's elevation, like, he's always 30 to 50 yards ahead of me. And then, you know, feels sorry, and he'll stop for a second. He doesn't need a break, but he'll stop and wait for me to get to him. And the second I get to him, he's off again. I'm like, dude, let me get a chance to stop. So
to the victor goes the spoils, my man.
But, dude, so we kept going, and all of a sudden, like, Zach finally waits for me. And I see his green light up there, and I get up there to him, and I'm, like, dying, dude. I'm sweating. Like,
we sat down at one point. Yeah, we sat down for a while.
We get on the side. I should have knew. Like, if he sat down, I'm like, there's something coming, okay? It should have eluded me of what was about to happen. So we sit down. I'm like, oh, this is great. We sit down in the dark, and he's like, man, we're making pretty good time, and, you know, this is going to go good. But he's like, you know, we got to cross this little drainage, and we got to go up the other side. And I'm looking at the maps. I'm like, oh, dude, it's only, you know, a couple hundred yards, maybe 300 yards tops of where we're going to go. And I'm like, okay, cool. So we go down and, like, cross this little drainage and then get up on the other side and hit this skitter trail. And I'm like, okay, cool. We're just going to run the skitter trail up. Dude, we are on that skitter trail for 15 yards, and all of a sudden, I see him cut and look up this ridge and just start going. And dude, I looked up there, and first off, it's thick. There's, like, saplings. And I'm like, it is that kind of slope when you're looking – again, you're looking back at the root balls. Like, you're looking up underneath the oak trees. Like, they'll be washed out, and you're like, oh, okay, whatever. I look at the maps. I'm like, oh, it doesn't look that far, that high up. I'm like, whatever. We'll be dude, he starts going, and it's not like – the next day, whatever, or like late that afternoon, we hiked another steep spot, and we were like, Zach, I learned something from you. To kind of zigzag your way up those steep slopes. Like, you're not walking straight. You're like kind of like side hill for like 10 yards and cut back across and just kind of zigzagged all the way up, which helps a ton. Should have done that. He just starts eating this hill, this ridge, and I'm like, oh, I'm smoked at this point. And we just start going. And literally, I'm going like 5 yards at a time and stop. I'm like, I'm about to die on this mountain, dude. Like, dude, it is so steep. Dude. It is so steep. Like, it's steep enough. Like, if you slipped and if you didn't land right, you were sliding for a long ways until you hit a tree, okay? And we're going up there. I'm like, this is way worse than the Stairway to Hell, okay? Way worse than that. Like, that is a cakewalk compared to what he took me up. And dude, we're just going. And I'm like, literally, he got up there like 60, 80 yards ahead of me. And like, his light almost like disappeared. I'm like, oh, he must be like at the top. Because I didn't even look my phone. I was like, I'm not pulling my phone out, okay? And then I keep going. I'm like, dude, at one time, like, I fell down on my knees. And I'm like, I'm going to sit here on my knees for a second, dude. I'm like contemplating life, like laying here. And like, I'm like, and he's up there and like his light disappeared. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, he must be at the top. We kept going. And like, I don't even get to him. And all of a sudden, I see his light come back on and he just keeps going. I'm like, we're not at the top, dude. Like, we've been going up this hill. It felt like 20 minutes, okay? And I'm like, dying. Finally, dude, we get to like, we're not even at the top yet. And like, we get there and he stops. And I'm like sitting there. I'm back on my knees again. I'm like, I'm just sitting here for a second. I'm like, I've got to like, dude, I had this, that big headband light I've got, like real wide light, buddy light, whatever. And it is, there's sweat dripping off that thing, like in my mouth, like as I'm going up, dude. And like, dude, it's in my eyes are burning. I'm like, this is terrible. Dude, I mean, like every part of my body was killing me, okay? Finally, I get up to Zach and like, I can't talk.
The only thing you said, this is what he goes. He goes, woo. He goes, no, he goes, woo. That's a hill.
dude, that's all I could get out of my body. Man, anyways, he's like, all right, cool. He's like, he told me as we're going up, he's like, be quiet. We're going to get up to where we're going to go hunt. There was no being quiet, dude. I'm cracking sticks. I mean, stuff sliding out from underneath my feet, dude. I'm being loud as crap. Well, I get up to him and I'm dying. And he's like, all right, we're going to find a tree right here. And he's like, I'm like standing there, like leaned up on that trekking pole. And we're still on the side slope. Slightly less steep, but still steep. And he's like walking around trying to figure out what tree we're going to get in. I'm like, all right, cool. He's like, you want to get in the same tree? I'm like, yeah, that's fine, dude. And finally, he's like, all right, we're going to get this tree right here. This is perfect. And I start undoing all my stuff. And dude, as I'm undoing my stuff, I'm like, I just dropped on my knees again. Like, I'm not standing up. I'm just dropping on my knees. I'm just like, kind of sitting there, just like contemplating, like, oh, my God.
Contemplating life.
Yeah, I'm like, this is rough. Start taking my saddle out, sticks off, all that kind of stuff. And, we're trying to figure out how we're going to get oriented in the tree because he's got his .5 he's using, his stand, and I got my saddle platform and all that kind of stuff, and trying to get oriented and how we're going to get in the tree. And Zach starts putting his sticks on the tree. I'm like, all right, cool. He starts putting his sticks on the tree, and like he gets up.
We're running late by this time.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
It's kind of like,
yeah,
okay.
It took me way longer to get up this ridge than he was expecting probably, because at first he's like, oh, we're making good time. Nah.
Dude, I've been set up since like, so sunlight was at what, about 7 a.m. ish somewhere.
Yeah.
I was set up at 6:20 and I texted y'all. I'm like, I've got deer all over me. It's 6:20 a.m. and it's like dark and I can hear them walking under me and everything. And I was like, I got deer all over me. And then y'all didn't get set up until.
It was gray light. I mean, it was 6:30, 6:35.
And I dropped
like
you off and had to drive to my spot. Yeah. And I was like, how are they getting in after me?
I would take your hike over this hike any day.
Oh, my hike was gravy. Yeah. That one's not bad.
No, not bad. No, but like, anyway, we finally get everything situated. And Zach's like, hey, just climb my sticks up and do that. I'm like, okay. Well, he's using his double sticks with aiders on them. Okay. Double steps with aiders. And I didn't think, I'm like, you know, he's tall guy, didn't contemplate, and I saw him like stretch up there, and I'm like, dude, that's a big gap between those sticks, dude, even with the aider. And I'm like, dude, I got these short legs, man. I'm like, you know, I'm fairly flexible, but I'm like, God. And then I started like looking at the stick, I'm like, looking at how long the aider, like the single step aider is, I'm like, dude, I hope I can get up that thing, like, for like all honesty. So I get up to the tree, I got two of my sticks tied up on my saddle, or like clipped into my saddle, and my platform on the other side. I got my backpack on, my bow's tied up with pull-up rope. Dude, I go up, I get on that first aider, and I just try to get that leg up. I'm like, dude, I don't know if I can get my leg up on this stick. So I'm like picking, I'm like lineman belt in the tree, foot in the aider, and I'm picking my right leg up, and I'm like heaving it up onto that step. And he's got four sticks high, and I'm like, oh, dude, this is bad. And anyways, I'm shaking. Dude, this is a big oak we're in. And he was telling me, he's like, dude, I'm never climbing a dead tree with you, like, ever. Because, you know, Zach, funny enough, likes to climb dead trees sometimes. And I'm like, dude, that tree would topple over because I'm shaking that tree just trying to get my leg up there, dude. And finally, I get up and, you know, attach one of my sticks on the side. And, anyways, kind of get all situated. Oh, I got some deer in the background. Got the platform, everything hung. And, dude, I'm smoked. And at that point, actually a little bit before that, I realized that you had my bow holder. Hanger.
Oh, yeah.
With my backpack. And I'm like, I don't have anything to hold my butt. I'm like, I guess I'm just going to sit in my lap, whatever. And we get all situated. Dude, I am sweating bullets at this point, dude. Like, just, I'm like, I cannot wait to get in the saddle and just be sitting here for like 4 or 5 hours. This sounds amazing. We finally get all situated. Zach let me borrow one of his ball holders. Got all that. We're all set up. And Zach, what was your experience, like, with me climbing that tree? Because, like, not going to lie.
Well, I just felt bad because I just I felt bad because I realized how, like, when I saw you trying to get into my aider, I was like, man, I guess, well, you used to climb with full-length sticks, right? So I was like, well, he's used to a bigger step. I didn't really think twice. And
yeah.
We were kind of running late, so I was like, you were just, I didn't realize how bad you were trying to gather yourself when we were at the base of the tree.
That didn't show. I was trying not and to show, so, but dude, I
show no before, weakness.
So, oh, do we got a buck outside, dude?
No.
Yeah, it's a little buck. Yeah.
Oh yeah, dude, looky there.
Swack.
Dude, we got some deer. Our YouTube audience could probably see them behind me right now.
Oh, yeah.
Got three of them feeding right here behind us.
Yep. That's the deer we should have been hunting this whole time. Urban bucks. But yeah, no, dude, I was dying.
So
but.
Yeah, I just felt bad because you know we're running a little late and not bad, but I was just like, you're standing there, and I was up, and I was like, just climb up my sticks if you want. Which it was, I was offering it, and so then you once you attempted it, I was like, all right, well,
if he falls, he falls.
No. If he so dies, we, he yeah, dies.
We were clanging and banging, and it really wasn't bothering me because in the mornings. Anytime I go anywhere in the morning, I just have a mental mindset that I'm just going to beat them to the spot. And if they're there and I blow them, it's just kind of out of sight, out of mind. I don't really worry about it. Like, I don't like to make metal-on-metal contact, but if I have to, you know, in the afternoons, I want to be, like, real quiet.
Yeah.
But in the mornings, I'm in my head, I'm like, I'm beating them here. So I'm like, when I seen those does yesterday, before we hunted it, I guess it was like 10 o'clock, so I was like, they're coming through there a little later, so I wasn't too worried about being louder, but we were just running a little late. So but yeah, we got all set up and everything, and you know, just kind of letting the day settle in, and I was happy that you were on deer, that you had quite a few deer underneath you and stuff. But I mean, it really wasn't too confident. Like I told you when you got there that morning, I was like, one of the you know, guides famous quotes is, you should have been here yesterday, like fishing quote or what, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you should have been here yesterday. And that's kind of what I was thinking. I was like, just because I seen deer when I was scouting in there doesn't mean they're going to come back. But I knew the acorns were good enough, and I like the way everything pinched down. I wanted to hunt that face because, like, I had found the buck sign just up above there based on last year and then this year. So I was like, where we're at, everything came right together there. So again, if like anything was going to come through there, they're going to be in bow range. And then we crossed a real heavy trail below us. So I was like, I want to be able to shoot that trail below us. I want to be able to shoot up if we can. And then that actually ended up working out whenever you got it, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, like, we get everything situated, realize Andrew in Texas, like, seemed like 45 minutes ago at that point. And once we got all situated, it was like, you know, gray light. It's like legal shooting light at this point. And we're just hanging out in the tree and probably been there. We've probably been up in the stand or up in the saddle, up in the tree, whatever, for 30 minutes maybe. And kind of cooling off, you know, just trying to dry all the sweat off me. Because, I mean, it was, I could lick my top lip, old mustache, and dude, it was just, I mean, tastes like one of those elements, whatever. Just, I mean, straight salt. Just, I mean, covered in sweat. I'm like, dude, I probably smell so bad. I'm like, this deer's, you know, we get a deer below us, they're in a bus, but the wind was coming over top of the ridge, blowing down in the direction we'd come from. And we were talking, me and Zach, we were talking about, you know, if a deer comes out my weak side, because I was facing him in the tree, so he was on the opposite side of the tree from me. He's kind of facing downhill. I'm facing downhill as well, but I'm will be able to shoot the side trails off to our left. And I was like, man, if a deer comes out to my right, like, that's fair game for you. Like, I don't want to have to try to spin around this tree and try to get a shot at him. And of course, Zach was filming as well, and all of a sudden we hear coming off the top of the ridge, and we look up over there, and it's like, it's weird. It's like the transition between like all these saplings to like, I don't know if it's like cedars up there.
Yeah, there's cedars.
There's like big cedars up there, and it like kind of transitions. It's kind of dark in there. All of a sudden we see deer legs. I'm like, oh, we got deer coming. We got deer coming.
So you're like, here comes a doe. Doe coming down the hill.
Yeah, doe coming down the hill. And I was like, man, it's going to come down to your side. So I'll get my phone out. I'm like, I'm trying to pull my phone up to film him. And then all of a sudden, instead of coming onto my weak side, it then kind of cuts back, you know, over my left shoulder. And I was like, oh, dude, like, okay, well.
Yeah, so you nodded at me, and I got on the camera. So I'm filming. I'm in film mode. You're in kill mode.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and it comes just directly at us. Well, and it happened quick.
It happened quick. And another funny thing about it is I was giving Andrew, I was giving you so much crap because you're like, man, I'm going to go shoot a doe on one of these mountains. I'm like, if you shoot it, it's your problem at that point. I'm not helping you pack a doe out, okay? Well, this is like day 4 or 5, and I'm like, if a doe comes through here, it's downhill pretty much the whole way. I'm shooting the doe. Like, we're just getting it. We're just going to shoot it. So anyways, it's coming off the hill. And as it's coming off, like, kind of realize at that point, we're in a big tree. There's some good cover around us, but, like, it's still not just perfect. And it pins us. And I'm, like, just trying.
Well, it's at eye level with us because it's coming down.
Yeah, eye level pins us. And I'm, like, just.
How far is it at this point?
25 yards, probably.
Okay.
Maybe 30. And we just pause, and then all of a sudden, kind of like, I can see my peripheral. I'm like, I'm just not even going to look at it because I have my bow in my hand, kind of getting ready to spin. I see the tail flick. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. It's all good. Tail flick. Deer's going to move again. And it comes down a little bit further, hits this trail and starts, you know, side hilling kind of away from us, which is perfect for my strong side because the deer's just off my left shoulder. So I spin around, and it's about to walk behind this big big chestnut water oak. Or not chestnut water oak, but mountain oak. Chestnut mountain oak. And mountain chestnut, whatever. It's about to walk behind this, like, 2.5-foot, 3-foot diameter tree. And I'm like, oh, this is perfect. Perfect. So I'm like, second he gets behind that tree, like, I'm already kind of spun around. I'm like, I'm just going to spin around a little bit more and get my bow drawn back. The second his head goes behind it. Second it does it, I do it. I start drawing my bow. Well, I didn't pivot my body all the way around. So I'm like trying to draw across my body like this, okay? And you see it in the video, and you probably can cut some of this. It's hilarious. I start drawing my bow back, and I'm like, why can't I get my bow back? Like,
you were trying to draw your bow so long as I'm videoing. I look down like, what is he doing?
I was across my body behind me trying to get that bow drawn back, which is a terrible position, by the way, without shifting my legs around. And I was like, I can't get the – I'm like, what's going on with the bow? And all of a sudden, I feel this pop in my right shoulder, my you know, drawing arm. And this warm feeling comes over. And I'm like, if I just tore something, I'm not letting this deer get away. Like, I'm still pulling it back. So I pulled – I got it locked back. I'm like – then I pit my legs around. I'm like, okay, it's whatever. And I was like, I'm going to use this deer right here in the yard behind us. This guy on there, and the second she came out from behind the tree, like, looking at us – I was like just coming back to full draw, and she like put her head down and just kind of kept walking and stopped and fed right there. I'm like, this is perfect. Settle the pin, release, smack.
Oh, dude. I'm so proud of you.
Dude, I about popped my shoulder out. So like, oh my God, that hurt. That was such a hard angle to draw on.
Let's go.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh. Awesome.
The ninja bow on your back, baby.
And I do the perfect, almost like that watermelon sound. You know, just pop. Yeah. And deer goes tearing off. And second I saw the arrow hit, I'm like, oh, that deer's done. Okay, perfect. It looked perfect. And as it's run off, you can see blood coming down the side of it behind the shoulder. And I'd spin around. I hang my bow up. And Zach said something. It was like, oh, you tin-ringed it or what? Tin-ringed it or whatever. And I was like, man, that was awesome. But I'm like, dude, I just jacked my shoulder up, dude. Like, it is on fire right now. And we're just sitting there, like, kind of, you know, celebrating a little bit. Like, oh, that was awesome. And ended up, I think we sat there for a little. I mean, we sat there for, I think, another 2 hours, seeing if another deer come through.
Yeah, it was cool all morning, 50s. But well, it was fine.
What was your experience? Kind of like, again, me trying to get that bow drawn back, and then still that deer letting me get an opportunity to shoot at it.
Well, it happened quick because she come down as hustling and bustling. And you were like, you were kind of mentioning like, hey, if she's going to come to your side, shoot her. So then once I went to camera mode, you went to kill mode. Then it was kind of like the deer was already almost in range.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how what happened because she come around the tree and perfect shot. I got on video. I mean, it was a really cool, everything about it was cool. And then, you know, I could just see blood. You seen blood. We're both like, oh, she's toast. No big deal. So let's just, you're like, hey, I'll video now, whatever, grab your bow. And so we waited and we heard a buck, or what we thought was a buck, come from below us a little later on. And I was hoping maybe later on in the morning something good was going to, like the bigger buck I hope was there, was going to come through. And when we left there, we come through a drain, and we think it probably was a buck that had come through the bottom.
Big
but anyways,
tracks.
So he come through and left. And then after that, right after that, three does crested the hill up top. And so that was pretty cool. And I think there were the three deer that were in there the day before. So we had a really cool morning, fun set. You had a deer. So it was like 9 o'clock. It's like, let's get down and go get this thing. And so,
by the way, the story gets a little creative here in a second, but so we ended up climbing down and walking, and I like after I shot it, I mean, deer was 20 yards. I'm like looking at my binos. I'm like, I can't see my arrow, but I'm pretty certain I got a full pass through. But I can't see it. Like there's like right where the deer was at, just below the deer was some sapling, like a little bit of green cover. I couldn't see. I didn't have to shoot through. I shot over the top of it to shoot the deer. It was fine, but I was trying to look through it. I can't see my arrow, and I don't have a light of Knox or anything. But anyways, we walk up there. Second, we walk up there. I find the arrow, blood covered. Smells great. Like doesn't when I say smells great, doesn't have like any gut smell. And I'm like, dude, this deer smoked. Shot the sever. I'm like, this deer is toast. And we start looking, and I'm like, trying to figure out exactly where the deer were standing at. And I'm like, I don't see any blood. You know, Zach didn't see any blood. We're sitting there. And I didn't know it until this point. Zach, you're colorblind.
Yeah.
Or like red-green.
I didn't know you're colorblind.
I have a really hard time just picking blood up on, you know, like rocks and leaves, especially leaves. Like if it's just a lot of leaf litter, it's real hard.
But like he told me that at that point. I'm like, oh crap. Like, okay, cool. Like that's interesting. Like I've never hunted with a guy that's colorblind. He kind of explained like how it looks and everything, which is kind of an interesting take because I think Greg Mayhere also red-green colorblind because he talked about that a little bit in the past. But anyways, we don't see any blood in the impact zone. But I'm like, okay, hit it with two inch mechanical. Like this is gonna have a huge hole in it. So we keep walking. I'm like, well, dude, we go 20, 30 yards and don't see any blood. It's still we're on the shaded side of the mountain, still like very little sunlight. And I'm like, why is this deer not opening up? Like, what's going on? And dude, we spent probably 15, 20 minutes like looking for blood and kind of we walked up to where I thought the deer kind of side-hilled around the ridge and kind of went over the top. Could not find anything. And we're like, we're going back looking at the footage, like Zach's looking at the footage.
And I'm looking, I'm like, oh, it's full pass through, perfectly broadside. Like the arrow was couldn't have been any better.
Yeah. I mean and he looked at the shot, he's like, dude, shot was perfect. I mean, absolutely perfect. And finally we go back down and he goes back down. I'm like on top of the ridge, kinda going back and forth looking where the deer I thought circled up. And then I hear Zach, he's like, hey, I got blood. I'm like, ain't no way. We've been looking for like 15, 20 minutes. So I go back down there and he's literally 3 to 5 foot lower in elevation than where we were, where the arrow was at.
Because when we got down, went straight to your arrow, and we just instinctively kind of went up.
Yeah.
And it was a lot lower. We got on blood, followed it down, and there was a lot of blood once we actually found what we were looking for.
Yeah, and got on it. It was so funny because we were 10, 15 yards off of it. Like I thought the deer kind of went up the hill, it just kept side hill and kind of a little lower elevation and finally crested. But we followed it anyways, got out to this little opening. And
I get ahead of you.
Yeah, he gets a little ahead of me, and it's going uphill. I'm like, if it's going uphill, like we might not have that much good blood. Like once it started going uphill, and it kind of petered out a little bit, and he just walks, 30 yards ahead of me. And he's like, oh, I got it right here,
and I'm like, hey man, you shot a spike.
and I'm like,
surprise.
I'm like, why are you joking with me about that? And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, you actually did. I'm like, no freaking way. Dude.
And he goes. Andrew's going to give me so much crap for this.
He said he shot a spike. I'm like, how? Like, I was looking at it 20 years. Like, I never saw spikes. And I'm like, it's got to be like little keychain things. I get up to it, and it's a 4-inch long half velvet spike on one side, broke the other side off. I'm like, are you kidding me, dude?
Dude.
Like seriously, are you kidding me?
I had some fun with it, not going to lie.
Yeah, dude. I'm like, cool. I'm like, okay, first mountain deer with the bow. Like, that's awesome. But like, not what I wanted. Like, did not intentionally shoot it because it was a spike.
Well, it was hard to see. Like, I never even saw the antler or anything. I saw the pictures from what y'all sent, but like of that four, he only had a spike on one side, and it was half in velvet, and the top part, like the top half of it, had shed, and it was like black.
Yeah, super
and
dark.
And you shot him like right there at first light, and so it was pretty dark. Like, I could totally see. How you could end up accidentally shooting that thing.
It couldn't have been any better.
No, but it was so funny.
Hey, if you want to shoot a spike and it fires you up, shoot the spike.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, Jacob just doesn't normally do it, so I give him crap.
Well, there is a YouTube video on our channel from like 4 years ago where I intentionally shot one opening day in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
Off the ground.
Like 10 yards.
Yeah. Just I was like, oh, it's your time. Just like a little confidence booster. But anyways, I get to tell I was like joking with Zach. I'm like, it's whatever. I'm like, that sucks, but you know, it is what it is. Like, fun experience and all that kind of stuff. Cool footage. You know, dragged the deer back. And one thing I noticed right when we like started dragging it back and we got it back, you know, kind of out of that little opening and get it back in the woods, started working on the deer, was the tarsal glands. Dude, they stunk. They were dark. They were darker than the buck I shot during pre-rut, early rut back in Alabama last year.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's partly in velvet. I'm like, what is this deer doing, dude? I mean, he's ready to go.
He's fired up.
Yeah, just ready to go. But anyways, you know, broke the deer down and packed him out. And
how much do you think he weighed, by the way?
I mean, 70 pounds probably.
These deer up here are small.
They're small.
They're small. Yeah.
It looked bigger because he like kind of just, you know, it'd been like 3 hours after we shot him. He just started swelling up a little bit. But like, yeah, he probably wasn't, you know, he's probably right around 70 pounds. That's what I thought when it was coming down. I'm like, oh, 2-year-old doe, you know, mountain doe. Like, this is perfect. But yeah, it ended up being a spike. But we packed the stuff. This is where, to me, there's an interesting part of the story from like what I mentioned earlier about this hill. Get the deer all packed up, cleaned up, and start coming off the mountain. Well, we start going down this ridge again. I'm like, dude, this is like super steep. Hit this little skitter trail that never even realized I ever crossed. And we finally get down the bottom. And it's like we're walking through like saplings. all around us. So, like, you can't see side hill very well when you're going downhill. Well, we get down in the bottom that we crossed, and I look back up there. I'm like, oh, my God, dude, that's what we walked up this morning? No zigzagging, going straight up. Dude, it was so steep and just thick, and it was interesting because, like, we were at, like, not the head of a drainage, but the bottom of a drainage that kind of petered out probably 400 feet up above us. And it was like a habitat edge right there along that drainage where it was like sapling thick. But, dude, that hillside was so crazy steep. And then, like, when I get back down there, I mentioned it to Zach. I was like, dude, I can't believe that's what we walked up. Like, if we were walking up in the afternoon, I would have had a different mindset. Like, if I – because, like, also another thing I didn't mention. So, Zach was running his green light. I typically run a white light. Like, once I get to a tree or something, I might switch it over. Like, climb the tree, I'll switch it over to, like, red. But he's running the green light, so I'm like, I'm just going to run my red light the whole time. And the red light, you can't see very far, at least the one I have. Like, I can see maybe, like, 15 yards in front of me, but it's not super defined. And it's also kind of weird because, like, your visual perspective is, like, kind of thrown off, like, as you're walking. It's hard to, like, for me, to, like, tell exactly what I'm stepping on at all times. Mm-hmm. But, dude, if I would have ran that white light and, like, walked up into that hill and hit that white light, I would have, like... I don't know.
Well, so
you're gonna be like, I'm going back to the truck.
I'm sitting down here on the bottom.
So when I scouted that, you know, I come around and looped around and I stayed high elevation. I never climbed it the day before. I come off of it and I wouldn't even consider. And I was like, no, this is the spot. I was just excited. I knew I wanted to come back, and so I didn't even consider like how steep it was going to be going up. But you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I stayed high the whole time and made a big horseshoe around to it.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have to go, like, straight up. And if I would have done it again, I attempted to kind of keep going around that morning. But I look and I'm like, man, we're going to go a long ways out of the way. And so I was like, let's just kind of make it a shortcut.
Hey, there are no shortcuts.
There's no shortcuts in the mountains. We've learned that multiple times this week.
Yes.
But anyway, but that was...
lessons you got to learn the hard way.
It was a cool experience, you know, after killing a deer and finding the deer and getting all packed up and just hanging out with you, Zach, and stuff in the trees. Because that's the first time I've really been able to talk to you for any, like, length of time.
Yeah. The morning when you got there, literally, you got your stuff out, and I was thinking, you know, I've guided for a while and just kind of just think about things. And I thought to myself, this is going to go either really good or really bad. And it went good. It was fun. Yeah. I told you today when I got here, I was like, I had a blast. You know, it was fun. I mean, I got to see a bunch of deer, and it's just, it was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of those cool experiences. And also, like, learning, like, once we get to that spot, I'm like, dude, this sets up so good for the rut too. Like, early season, I think it's great, but for the rut, this is a killer spot.
Mm-hmm. So just off the top of my head, this pops in my mind. So, you know, out here, there's terrain features everywhere. You could look at, oh, this is great. This would be great during the rut. This would be great during the rifle. So then you flip the script and come back, you know, then you're kind of almost starting all over again. Like, where are you going to pick? Why are you going to be there? You know, I guess from what I learned later, once the leaves dropped, it was definitely more cover. I would start going through those roto patches and blowing deer out of there. You know, you got to look for the cover, but still it's like, you know, you could look at the terrain on the map and be like, well, this is good and this is good, but you're still kind of guessing again, just like we are now.
Yeah. Well, and another thing, you know, we had heard stuff walking around, making a lot of racket down the bottom, which we kind of at first assumed it was a buck, and they went down and found big tracks, fresh tracks down there. So it probably was a buck. But when we got on that point that was directly across from us, the one that we had gone down to come back up this big ridge that morning, when we got back on that other secondary point walking out, dude, there was so much feed sign. Like, Andrew, we never found feed sign like that, like, where me and Zach went. It was just a red oak. There's a ridge point that had a bunch of red oaks on it. And there was busted caps, notched caps everywhere, acorns on the ground. There's tracks, droppings, everything. The whole point was like that, just insane. And it made it very interesting to see that and, like, just how isolated some of it was. Because, like, once we walked out of it, it was, like, not like that anywhere else.
It was,
else.
Like, nowhere.
Yeah. And so it was just interesting to kind of see that perspective, because there's, like, there's some areas. And, Zach, you were asking me some questions, like, you know, would you run a camera down here? Your thoughts on, like, mock scraping, all that kind of stuff. And looking at it, it's, like, one thing I've kind of realized out here is a lot of the drainages, there's some drainages that are kind of thick, but a lot of the drainages are pretty open. It's, like, just all the ridge points have cover. It's, like, there's cover on the ridge points, and it's, like, very subtle cover, like sapling thicket, stuff like that for early season. And it's, like, you can just imagine, like, one of these bucks just, like, running down these points, the side of these points, where he's got some kind of, you know, he's got a visual advantage, but also he's got some cover next to him that he can bounce back through and, you know, drop off the other side. And that's how a lot of the sign laid out. I mean, just running the side of these ridge points, coming up and down in elevation, then, you know, some stuff kind of cutting across, you know, some of these drainages to get back on another ridge point to run it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to get back up here for the rut at some point. You know, a nice thing about the mountains is that everything is like kind of extreme and exaggerated. And I feel like the terrain features are going to be like that. You know, the big saddles, the big landscape saddles that we talked about before, I think those are going to be money. Some of these little hubs and high crow's foots or high crow's feet, whatever you want to call it, up on the side, I think those are going to be really good. And the rhododendron thickets too. They're isolated. And I feel like in the rut, you could come up here and do really good either putting some serious time into those landscape features like the big saddles and thermal hubs and stuff like that. Or targeting that thick cover and hunting the edge of that thick cover. I think you can do really good.
So
doing
which
that.
Would you take? Would you take terrain or would you take cover? Or obviously had, best
if,
of both.
If I had like one day to come and kill something, I would hunt the cover. If I had a whole week, I would maybe hunt the big terrain funnels.
That's I like that.
Because like the terrain funnels out here is such big country and it's low deer density and it gets so open when the leaves come off. I think that those big terrain funnels need time. Like, you're going to have to sit in them for a while. If you're being a little more aggressive and you're hunting around the rhododendron, it maybe not as much because you're going to the deer. You're not waiting for them to come to you. But, like, that buck you shot last year in that big saddle, I mean, you sat on it, what, three times before you killed it?
Four times.
Four times before you killed it? So, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. But I'm excited, man. I really like this. Are you going to hunt up here next year?
I might come back this year.
This year?
I've been scouting a bunch this summer, like a lot. Been living in Iowa now, just running a ton of cameras. You got me on the trail camera addiction. And it's funny how it's like almost like a hot, it's like a hot debate now.
Yeah.
Trail cameras and like drones and cell cameras. It's like everyone's just like all buzzing about it. Kind of like fan and turkeys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like,
yep.
But I definitely got into the trail cam game, and I like running trail cameras because it takes some skill to get them in the right spots. And if I can get a camera in a spot and get some good bucks, that's a win. Like, okay, I read it good enough to get a camera in a spot, and I'm getting some deer on it, regardless if they are consistent or not. But I got some cameras up here into some spots. But my point with that was I was in hunt mode here, and I went to some spots that I hunted, and I didn't take cameras with me, which was my plan. And I was like, oh, crap, I forgot my camera. I wanted to leave them.
Yeah.
But I got some out, and I want to come back, and maybe we'll see. Because I had quite a few bucks on – the place we hunted last night, I had from like the November 6th to the 9th, those 3 days windows going back. Is it Daniel, your taxidermist?
Yeah.
Daniel Williams.
He talked about those historical dates, and it's like, man, that was like the bread and butter.
Episode 584 for everybody.
Bingo.
Yeah, that's the one you're talking about.
You know, I'm not up until this year, I'm not a big trail camera guy. My brothers, they hunt like specific farms in Kansas. And they stay off our properties until the bucks show up. A lot of does live in there. And they're like, oh, there's a good one in here. Let's go. They'll capitalize almost within a couple of days. But pre-rut, and I told them, I said, hey, we need to go back on some of those good deer and start looking at the dates hard. And people really, I would say, if anyone out there, I think him bringing that point kind of blew my mind. I was like, that makes perfect sense because the mature bucks know the does. Mm-hmm. They can go to every bar and find all the ladies, whereas the younger ones are just out there running havoc. And I think if you want to kill a bruiser, you need to look at your dates.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish we had brought trail cameras with us to leave up here, and we didn't. We really should have, when I'm kind of bummed that we didn't. But, again, I feel very confident hunting this terrain in the rut, especially if it's during rifle season or muzzleloader or something. Now, the big question is, Mr. Ginger Bowhunter, what do you think about this area? You know, like, honest opinion, like, would you be excited about coming back to hunt this? Like, where are you at?
I'd be excited to come back about 40 pounds lighter.
Okay. No, first night I met you, I got up here, you were like, rifle, I got a rifle. I'm like, he's already bow hunt going thinking straight rifle. That's why I wanted to call you. That's why I wanted to call you Red Rider. But you still got a little got some killer instinct.
No, listen, I'll hunt with a bow, but it would be very fun to hunt this leaf off with a rifle.
Oh, yeah.
And like, maybe not even worry about getting in a tree, to be honest, because the way the elevation lays out, I mean, you really can use the elevation as your stand and just get high and be able to shoot down onto, like, you know, some of these, you know, different terrain features with saddles, big finger ridges, big thermal hubs, stuff like that, and use that to your advantage. But yeah, it's that would be, I'd get very excited about that.
So
I'll be honest, I wouldn't come back up here to bow hunt like opening week. If we came back up here and bow hunted, I would want to do it in October when there's a lot more sign being laid down.
Yeah.
Like there's still oaks dropping, red oaks would still be dropping or kind of maybe wrapping up, but there's going to be a lot more rubs, a lot more scrapes, that activity. Because I think, Zach, that was one thing you mentioned to us, like some of these areas you were finding a lot of buck sign in. And I'm curious, was that more so like in October or was that like early in September?
Yeah, it was neat to just watch the whole season progress from the start. I started looking and scouting in August and I shot that big 11 pointer like the end of November. And going back to the terrain and how hard it is to get to, that was kind of the thing that I found the most, you know, because you think about it, September, October, I didn't kill a buck till November. I killed two bucks right in a row in November, but going back up and down, and I do it twice a day sometimes, like I just kind of had you just kind of have this mental mindset like I'm gonna get it done, you just have to keep going if you have a lot of time or whatever. But yeah, it was neat to watch how everything progressed and changed with the leaves dropped, you know, and how they went to the cover. And then I would walk some benches and all of a sudden I'd see like a scrape line on the benches that was never there before, and I'd see some rubs that weren't there before. So it was neat. And anywhere, you know, like some of those real deep draws and stuff, I told you I found some really heavy rubs through there that they were using to come through a lot of open or negative terrain where big mature trees were, and they were funneling down just to, you know, like in the south, I guess it'd just be your little tight ditches. Those bucks were getting in the ditches, you know? And so like, if you're in an area with a lot of pressure, like those bucks are literally going to go down and hide just to get out of like plain sight, you know? And I saw that here. So that was really neat. Yeah. But it was cool. Not a lot of buck sign, not a lot of scrapes. But when you'd find the sign, it'd be a lot of it.
Yeah. So in pockets, just
pockets
like
of deer.
Just like the deer. I mean, you could go in some of these woods and probably spend 4 or 5 days and never see anything. It's like you had to find the pockets of where those deer are at and, you know, kind of capitalize on it. But, I don't know if y'all are good, but I know our guests have showed up. So,
oh, sweet.
Y'all got any last kind of thoughts on this trip, mountain hunting, Andrew, anything you've got?
I'm glad we did this. This is fun. I felt like, you know, we talked about Georgia last year. It's a good tune-up hunt before season comes in. And I felt, I've never felt this dialed before going into a deer season. Like, my gear was good to go. Like, we got straight on the deer. So, like, I just feel, I'm excited, man. And we got to interview a bunch of killers on this trip. It's been a really, really, really good trip.
Yep. Still got a couple more to interview. So
that's right.
Awesome. You got anything else, Zach? Any other thoughts?
Thanks for having me. It was fun running with you boys for a couple of days. And I will say to any of your listeners, I think you guys got the best deer hunting show on the planet. You guys are entertaining, and you guys know your stuff. And what I like about you guys are killers. And maybe you don't have the biggest bucks on the wall, but in time you will. And what I like about your show is you guys are entertaining. You guys really dive deep with the questions, and it's always fresh. And when you have a guest, I told you this yesterday, I know I'm going to get what I'm looking for, and I'm going to get tactics. I'm going to get things that a different perspective I've never heard before. And so props to you guys.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
Means a lot.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, perfect. Well, listeners out there and viewers, appreciate y'all watching and listening to this episode. If y'all enjoyed it, please leave us a 5-star written review on Apple Podcasts. It greatly helps the show. Or you can leave us a 5-star review on Spotify. All the YouTube audiences, share the show. It's a big thing that kind of helps us grow the channel and allows us to do more of this kind of in-person content. So thank y'all for watching. Thank y'all for listening. And we'll catch you back here on the next episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Remember, guys, y'all stay southern.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody.
whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code SOUTHERN10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.